All right, well, good afternoon. I want to get started, try to get us back on time here. My name is Michael McKenna. I'm the headmaster at Rockbridge Academy in Millersville, Maryland. Can you hear me? No, you can't hear me? Can you hear me now? I hate that expression now. The Verizon commercials have ruined it for me forever. Well, thank you for being here. This is, if all the world's a stage, we need to train the actors. So let's open with a word of prayer, and then we'll get started. Let's pray together. Our kind Father, thank you for your mercy and tenderness towards us in Christ. We thank you for the opportunity we have to gather as co-laborers in your great vineyard and discuss the issues of classical Christian education. We pray that you would guide and direct our conversation this afternoon, for it's in Christ's name that we pray. Amen. The purpose of this workshop is to give you a philosophical and a biblical rationale for including a drama program in your classical and Christian schools, and then to provide you with some nuts and bolts on how to actually bring this crazy endeavor to pass if you decide you actually want to do one, a production. This is not going to be so much as of a discussion as to how to teach an acting class or a drama class, but more or less I want to convince you that drama is something you should be doing, make a case for that, and then provide you with some nuts and bolts practical issues that you need to think about before you attempt to do a production at your school. So that's having said that, let's begin. As classical Christian educators, we've already decided that we want to teach rhetoric in our schools. We wouldn't be classical schools if we left rhetoric off the table. So we're going to teach rhetoric. That's a settled issue. Of the five canons of rhetoric, invention, arrangement, style, memory, and delivery, the final one, delivery, actually comes from the word actio, which is where we get our word acting from. Delivery is all about how the case is presented. It's been said of Winston Churchill that he could never have stirred the British public as he did were it not for the grave, serious, and controlled tone of voice that he employed in his radio speeches. His faith in the Allied powers rang out in stentorian cadences that by their very vibrations instilled belief in the masses. His message was often cliché, but his delivery was never anything but spellbinding. Had he had a feeble voice, perhaps Germany would have fared better. It's a bit of a suggestion, but it's possible that if Winston Churchill was not able to persuade the people of Britain and motivate them as he did, perhaps Germany would have fared better. So the delivery of Winston Churchill, the power with which he persuaded the British people and the world at large, can't be underestimated. And let's face it, delivery, the fifth canon of rhetoric, is a very important aspect of our training. In addition, we want our training, all of our training at school in rhetoric, to be real world, have real world applicability to what we do. We don't want it to be to take on the aura of theory only, that only exists in the classes. Hence, we give them real world thesis papers to defend before a live audience. That's real world application of rhetoric to a particular thesis. Well, drama is real-world application of rhetoric as well. So if you're going to teach rhetoric, and you are, your classical schools, you ought to be including a drama program as good support and real-world applicability of those things that you're teaching. What are some of the benefits of a drama program? Poise. We read in Proverbs 22:29, "Do you see a man skilled at his work? He will serve before kings. He will not serve before obscure men." I want my children to be ready to communicate the truths of the gospel in a clear, confident, and winsome manner. We want our students to have poise. We don't want them to be servile. We want them to be leaders. We want them to stand before kings one day. And the poise that students get from participating in a drama production, standing before an audience of 300, 400, 500 people, carrying their lines out with vim and vigor and gusto, creates poise in these young men and women that other avenues might not. Leadership. Let's face it, rhetoric is training in leadership. If we want our students to be persuasive young men and women, Persuasion is an aspect of leading. It's an aspect of leadership. Within the theater production, there are many opportunities to be stretched and for our students to grow as leaders. It's been a joy in my high school to see students taking charge of the stage crew. I'll have a stage manager who is a student, and he has this crew of 10 young men and women. And it's his job, not mine as the director, it's his job to make sure that everything happens with lickety-split precision during that performance. His job is to make those 10 men and young women work like a finely oiled machine. It's not my job. And so to watch him rise to that task, a young man of 15, 16, 17 years old, taking charge of a group of other 15, 16, 17-year-olds, and in some cases dads, I have a lot of dads who want to be part, and to see that 35, 40-year-old dad submitting himself to the authority of a 17-year-old stage manager, this is great real-world leadership training for these young people. Perseverance. If you need instant gratification, don't put on a play at your school. Instead, it's painstaking practice after painstaking practice, and it's slow progress. Those who lack self-discipline and a willingness to undergo slow, steady progress will not do well in a theater production. But yet, those who need to be taught that sort of perseverance will benefit greatly from a theater program or a drama program. Building community. One of the benefits of a school theater drama program is the opportunity to bring different age groups of students together in a way that they never would be able to. You can't have seniors working along first graders on the athletic field, but you can have them working alongside one another in the drama program. In fact, if you have teachers or parents who are parents of grammar kids for the most part, and parents who are parents of high school kids for the most part, they will very often travel in different worlds or circles within your school. A drama or a theater program brings parents together in a way that other things might not, and it creates a sense of community as almost nothing your school can do will. An athletic program is a great community builder, but you're focused on a very specific group of kids, usually typically high school kids or middle school kids. Drama extends from one grade level to the next. In addition, we talk a lot at these conferences about truth, goodness, and beauty. But let's face it, beauty is the redheaded stepchild of the three. It frequently in our schools receives a third place runner-up status. And I think we need to focus more on the beautiful, not to the detriment of the good and the true, but a little more balance would be nice. And theater is a wonderful way to instruct our students in that which is not only good and true, but also beautiful. Well, curricular or extracurricular, that is the question. Does our drama program happen during the school day as a scheduled class? If so, what gets bumped in order to make room for it? That's a heavy question. That's a big question that you need to answer. We've answered that question by saying there's no room in the school day to bump anything. So if I want to do a drama, if I want to do a production, it's after school. That doesn't mean, though, that it can't be a class. Our drama production is a class. It's a class that takes place during the second trimester of the school year. It happens after school, but I take attendance. I give the students grades on their participation, on their diligence, and they receive a grade that goes on their transcript. So just because it's after school doesn't mean it can't be a class. Should it be an after-school club? If you want to get it started, should it just be an after-school club, much like a chess club? Those are all the questions that you need to wrestle with as you decide whether you want to do this or not. Okay, well, it's Friday on a long week, and you've been listening to people drone on for quite a bit, so I want to take a little bit of a break here and give you some eye candy and just show you one scene from one of our productions that we've done at Rockbridge Academy, just so you can see everything that I'm about to talk about, what goes into producing this.
Sounds crazy, love. keep up on us. That, I can tell you in one word, we're a beauty.
Thank you.
was the time when he spoke of him of all and delivered a few. That's all settled now, and let us see what he did wrong. It was a whore.
It was a
whore.
That's not from me. That's not me. So I hope you understand what you're getting yourself in for when you think about putting on a drama program. Okay, I've tried to turn this off. It's working intermittently. Ignore the people on the screen and pay attention over here. All right, so Act 1. What is the role of the director? What do you need to be thinking about when you consider putting on a play? First of all, your role as a director is to put yourself out of a job. You begin by managing... You begin... I really can't do it over that. I just feel bad for the people who buy the CD. All right, we'll try it again. When you begin a production, you're very involved as the director in every single detail. And what I mean by put yourself out of a job, your goal is to gradually turn over the stage management to the stage manager, the technical stuff to the technical director, the acting to the actors, the props to the property table manager. And so by the time of opening night comes, I honestly can sit back and enjoy the show because I have put myself out of a job. I've turned it over to children. I've turned the show over to children. When that happened, I was sitting in the back, just watching and taking notes. So really, your job is to put yourself your role is to put yourself out of a job. You do have several functions, though. You are a coach, much like an athletic coach. Your job is to take a diverse group of people and have them work together as a team for one common purpose, the glory of God and an excellent show. That's their job. They're all diverse, they have all different skill sets, but they need to work together as one thing. You're a choreographer. You're moving bodies through space and time to create meaning. You are a painter. You're using line, mass, balance, composition, light, shade, color to bring about some visual meaning. You are a musician. You're using rhythm, volume, pitch and tone color to create oral nuance. The other qualities a director must have, you must be enthusiastic because about 3 weeks before opening night, everybody's going to be tired and depressed because they'll never see how this is ever going to come to pass. And the only thing carrying it forward is your enthusiasm for the project. They've long since begun to check out. And you have to be gregarious. You're going to be working with people, and you have to be very good at that. All right, how do you get started? In your handout, the first page is an organizational chart. You can see who answers to the producer on the first page there. I won't insult your intelligence and read all of that to you, but you need all of these people in place. The producers, stage managers, the tech crew, if you're doing a musical, the music director, costuming, makeup, all of these people have to operate at your direction. Does anybody not have a handout? Want to raise your hands? Anna, could you take care of those folks for me, please? And then each of those people needs to be given clear direction. The several pages following that organizational chart are sort of job descriptions. The responsibilities that each of them must carry out. So give them clear direction. Surround yourself by energetic, enthusiastic, self-starting people. Give them clear direction. Meet with them periodically to make sure they're getting the job done, and then let them go and watch wonderful things happen. All right, once you've gathered around yourself your production crew, you need to select the right play. What kind of things go into selecting the right play? Well, obviously, it has to meet the goals of your school. Are there any redemptive themes that suit your school? What about moral content? Obviously, there's a lot of junk out there that we wouldn't want to put before our kids. We wouldn't want them to perform. Occasionally, there might be a slight little bit of morally questionable content that you can cut out without diminishing the overall plot of the play. You need to think about that very carefully. Our last production was Oliver, and I was so excited to do Oliver. It's one of my favorite plays, and as soon as we announced the production of the play, my phone started ringing. Mike, she's a prostitute, for crying out loud. How can you do that? He kills her in the end. Have you no shame, man? And all these kinds of accusations were coming at me. And I had to say, well, wait a second. She gives her life for someone else. She gives up her life in the end for someone she loves. Yes, Bill is a wicked man, but what he reaps what he sows in the end. There is a cosmic justice out there. Let's think about this, people. So not only was I directing the play, I was trying to change parents' hearts and minds to be favorably disposed towards Oliver as well. Do you have what it takes to cast this play? Now, I don't mean casting the play in your mind beforehand. I don't mean holding sham auditions, because this is all done and decided before anybody walks through the audition door. I don't mean that. I just mean the way, if you want to do varsity soccer, do you have guys willing to come out for varsity soccer? Do you have what it takes? You need to think about that. Is it within your budget? Some plays are very expensive to put on. Others are not. So think about those budgetary things. Can you handle the technical requirements of the play? Fight scenes, light scenes, technical displays, all those sorts of things. Sound effects, lighting effects. Can you handle those sorts of things? You need to think about all of that before as you select your play. Now that you've selected your play, you need to actually begin. Laying out a rehearsal schedule. I've given you in your handout a sample of our rehearsal schedule for the last month of Oliver's rehearsals. Every rehearsal schedule needs to have five important pieces to it. Five important pieces. Obviously, the date of each rehearsal, the time each rehearsal begins and ends. Our parents will be picking up their children, and it's important that they know when that rehearsal ends. It's important for you as the director to make sure that rehearsal ends when you say it's going to end, so that you don't aggravate the parents who've arrived on time, done what they're supposed to do, and come to pick up their kids. The type of rehearsal. What are we going to do? Is this a read-through? Are we going to be blocking the play? Is this a tech rehearsal? So the kids need to get that in their minds. That means a whole other thing. Is this a dress rehearsal? Do I need to be in costume and makeup? What kind of a rehearsal does it need to be? Which actor scene you'll be working on, and who's required in that actor scene. Sometimes I've done a particular scene, but I only want to work with the two primary characters, so the three non-essentials don't need to come. But if I forget to tell them that and their parents drop them off and they're there for an hour and a half and they're not going to home to do their homework or their chores or whatever, I've just made people aggravated. So you have to think about all these details ahead of time. Who's actually required to come to this rehearsal? What are the different types of rehearsals? Well, the first rehearsal in any play is the orientation, and I want parents to come to that too. Parents need to come to the orientation. What do I cover? I hand out scripts. I introduce the principals, the stage manager, the set guy, the costuming lady, and so on and so forth. I discuss rehearsal policies. I discuss the play. While I have everybody in the room, that and opening night are probably the only two times I'll have everybody involved in the play in the same room at the same time. I want to make sure they all understand what the play is about. So I discuss the meaning of the play right then and there in the orientation. I'll even familiarize them with stage jargon. Do your kids know what downstage means? Don't expect them to. Do they? Better yet, do they know why it's downstage and not upstage? You know, go back to Elizabethan theater when the stage was tilted so the audience could see downstage and upstage. When they understand why things are the way they are and they understand what they're doing, they'll do it better, believe me. Then you'll have a read-through. I usually only have one of these, and again, I want everybody there because I want them all to know what's going on throughout every part of the play. And we'll read through. This also familiarizes the students with the lines. A student might have an idea that a line gets delivered this way, and at the read-through I'll be able to say in front of him and everybody else, no, here's how the line is to be read, here's how the line is to be delivered. Then we start blocking. Very tedious work here because you're not only telling, you know, gross motor movements, okay, Johnny, you move across the stage and you move over towards Sally. You're also teaching them very fine movements, what they need to be doing with their hands, how they need to be interacting with one another. You really are directing down to the minutest little movements. So imagine a three-hour play in which you've literally told everybody what to do with almost every part of their body for the entire time they're on the stage. It's very meticulous. Schedule an off-book date, schedule it early, and enforce it ruthlessly. Otherwise, they'll never memorize their lines. And the play, honestly, can't begin to progress until they get the scripts out of their hands. If they're constantly holding on to a script, reading it, and not being able to handle their props or interact with their fellow actors, the play will never move beyond the most basic blah. And so you must get their scripts out of their hands. Working rehearsals then, this is where the play really begins to take off, it begins to take shape, the characters begin to understand what's actually happening with all the interaction, and you begin to actually fine-tune this production. And then you have dress rehearsals, tech rehearsals, costumes, makeup, and so forth. So those are the various stages of the production that you'll be going through over the 3 months or however long it is that you have to put this together. Okay. Working with your set designer, things you need to consider as you work with a set designer, someone who will be actually painting the flats and bringing the sets into existence, budget. How much do you have to work with to build the flats, to rent anything you need to rent, if you need an ice machine or a smoke machine or something like that? The number of flats you'll need. Sometimes a play might call for a number of scenes, and you can get away with one fewer by combining scenes. For example, in The Importance of Being Earnest, there's three main scenes. The second scene is out in the garden, and the third scene, I think, is in a solarium. I've seen productions of that where both of the last two acts or scenes take place in the garden, and it works just fine. So we got rid of a whole need for all the set pieces for the third set. It works just great. So think about your play, whether you can do that sort of thing, and then you know how many flats you need to pull off your set. Okay? Backstage storage, big thing to think about, knowing where you're going to be having your play and whether it has enough storage in the back to store all the things you're going to need to put there. When we did Fiddler on the Roof, Tevye has that big milk cart. Well, the backstage area of that theater was rather small, and we needed to move the grand piano out, and we needed to move a couple of other things out because he needed to put that ox cart or that milk cart back in there, and it took up a considerable amount of space. So think about those sorts of things as you're putting this together as well. And then building space. Where are you going to be able to build these things? At school? Somebody's garage? Can they stay there until production time? If you're renting a theater and you move things into the theater, 2 weeks before production, do you have to move them all out again? We've had that happen to us, not move them all entirely out, but move them around because they need the stage while you're rehearsing. Think about those things. Our set designer is usually a parent with an artistic background who just jumps at the opportunity to paint these sets and bring this into existence. It's an artistic outlet for her, and she just looks forward to it. So look for somebody like that. You need to think through the play in its entirety before you meet with her and have an idea of what you want the sets to look like. Try to convey your ideas to her or him, and then ask the set designer to bring you back drawings indicating colors. Okay, we did Sound of Music. I got drawings without colors, and then we had sort of off the Mother Superior's interior of her church offices were sort of an off-color purple. I wouldn't have done that, but I didn't ask for the colors ahead of time, and so we made it work, and it was wonderful. So now I ask for colors on my sketches ahead of time, and we go over all of that first. Once you've approved all of that, let the set designer go. You'll also need to be casting about for set pieces, furniture, benches, chairs. What I do is I ask for people to send me digital photographs of things they want to donate. For example, if I need a set of Edwardian wingback chairs, rather than have somebody lug them all the way to the theater and then discover that I really don't want them because the color doesn't match or they just don't work, I'll ask them to send me a digital photograph ahead of time. Then I can check them out before anybody's moved anything. So you might want to do that. Sometimes you'll have to spend a couple of Saturdays running around looking at whether furniture actually works for you. I also have a mom who does finishing touches. After everything's in place, the set's in place, the stage is in place, she'll come around and she'll say, that table needs a flower arrangement. She'll go get the perfect flower arrangement. We need the coffee table looks bare without a couple of period books and an ashtray. We'll get a period books and an ashtray. And she just puts the final little finishing touches on. So find somebody who just gets really jazzed about doing that sort of thing. Stage properties exist under the purview of the stage manager. My stage manager. I have him set up an email account. Ours is, you know, raprops@gmail.com. And an email will go out saying, if you have anything that you could donate, please email Brandon at raprops, blah, blah, blah. And that's where the photographs start coming in, and I have this, and I have this. And he keeps track of what we're getting, and he brings me the photographs to show whether this works or that doesn't work. And so I really don't have to manage any of this. This is that leadership we were talking about before. I say, Brandon, it's all coming at you. It's your job. If you have any difficulties, let me know. But he's got to organize all of that. We also beg, borrow, and steal from public school drama departments, local theater groups, and everything. And what's wonderful about that is after 8 years of this now, they've begun to call us up and say, do you have any, we're doing Sound of Music. I heard you did that a couple of years ago. Do you have any Lederhosen? And it's just great to be able to reciprocate and develop community relationships with people beyond your immediate circle. Let's talk about stage lighting briefly. You need to, again, think about all of this beforehand. All of this prior thought is the director's job, and you have to have it clearly worked out in your mind, or you'll never be able to get everybody else to see it and understand it. You need to use lighting to draw attention to places or away from places. You need to establish mood with your lighting. Remember, if you want a somber mood and you want a dark scene, the actors' faces must be seen through all of this because they're paying to see the actors, not a light show. The very last scene in Oliver is a very complex scene in which three different things are all happening at one time, and I had a very difficult time working it out in my head, so I borrowed a couple of DVDs from other schools who've done it, see what they did, and I found out that I was not alone in understanding this was a very difficult thing because what these other schools had done was just turn the lights out, and all you heard were voices going, where's Oliver? Stop! Thief! Murder! Nancy! And all these things were going on in the dark. And I thought, well, that doesn't work. So that is what I bought a ticket for. So be careful with your lighting. Be careful how you transition. You'll want to think about, do you want a slow fade here, a blackout, a crossover where the light just kind of changes from one side to the other as action goes on, and so forth. Think about all those things. Costuming. I can't tell you how important your person in charge of costuming is. Whoever's in charge of your costuming has to be incredibly attentive to detail. incredibly attentive to detail. And you have to work closely with him or her to make sure that she has an idea, a clear idea, of everything that's going on in that show. For example, if an actor needs a coat pocket big enough to hold a prayer book in one pocket and a pistol in the other, she needs to know that before she goes out rummaging through Goodwill and everything else. If Oliver's going to be crawling around on the floor in his nightshirt, she needs to know that so that his nightshirt has pads that can wear up after 4 nights of crawling around on the floor. If he's going to have a very quick scene change, and so he needs to have clothes under his nightshirt, she needs to know that. And it's your job as the director to communicate all of this to her before she goes and puts stuff together. Because, how tragic would that be if she comes up with a wonderful costume and it can't work because you didn't communicate all the rest of the details to her. Let's talk about makeup. Oh, also beg, borrow, and steal from local theater groups not only stage props but costumes as well. That's a great way to develop relationships. I'll tell you a quick story. Again, with Oliver was our last production. If you know the show, Nancy's red dress is a very important piece. It's a very important piece of costuming, as is Fagin's coat. When we started to do this, I was thinking, okay, I'm going to need somebody very skilled to go find, not make, but go find a dress or a coat for Nancy and Fagin. Well, the seamstress called us up, who specializes in making bridal gowns. I mean, this woman is a professional. The whole front of her house is her workshop where she makes these fabulous wedding gowns. She called me up and she said, "I hear you're doing Oliver. You have to let me make Nancy's dress and Fagin's coat." And I said, "Okay." She did a great job. But, once you develop a reputation, people start coming out of the woodwork to help you. All right, makeup. I've heard of some people who say, we're just not going to do makeup. It's just one bridge too far. We just don't want to go there. And you really need to, because under stage lights, kids' faces just look bleached. They look wan. They look malnourished. Not to mention the fact that makeup helps bring out their facial features, which make their expressions visible even from the cheap seats. It's not just because we want to do makeup. It's to help people see what the actors are trying to portray with their faces. So you really do need makeup, but less is best. You don't want them looking like Cupid dolls or anything like that. I require the actors to have their own makeup kit. They're available from Bill Nye. Makeup online, just Google Bill Nye and you'll come up with that. Couple of reasons why I require them each to have their own makeup kit. Obviously, health reasons. I want everybody sharing all that stuff. Secondly, speed. They don't have a lot of time to put their makeup on, and if I'm having to stand waiting to get my, foundation or eyeshadow or whatever from the next kid that we're sharing, it just slows the whole process down. You have to have one person in charge of makeup, and I've been very blessed over the years to have our third grade teacher, Denise Hollidge, run our makeup for us. By the way, let me just say this. Very few of these people have expertise in theater with years of experience. They're just willing bodies, willing to do what it takes. Okay, Denise is not a disciple of Max Factor or anything like that. She just wanted to help, and this is the way she could help. She's done a fabulous job. She gathered a group of moms around her who were also willing to help, and they have a sort of a conveyor belt thing. We do the foundation here, eyes and lips over here, hair over there. By the time they come out the end of this contraption, they're looking great and 50 years older. So she does a wonderful job with them. Some of the kids have been in enough productions now that they go, "Thanks, Mrs. Hollidge, I'll take it from here." And they do their own, and they look fabulous. Schedule time during your dress rehearsal to just see the kids in their makeup under the lights. No acting, no lines, nothing like that. I just want to see what you look like in this scene under this lighting, because maybe they need to do a little bit more of this or a little bit less of that, and so you just have to see them. Okay? Schedule time during tech rehearsal once the lights have been set to actually look at them like that. Hair and wigs. We haven't done a lot with wigs. We just tend to touch up their hair with gray or whatever. But we do a lot of facial hair. You saw it all in Fiddler. Lots of wigs. You can rent them from places online, theater makeup companies and so forth. I have to tell you a quick story. One of our seniors was doing the part of Mr. Brownlow and Oliver, and he had a sort of a military buzz cut. And I said, "Look," it was about 3 weeks before the production. I said, "Look, Hugh, Your hair is never going to grow out in time to do justice to a 19th century English gentleman, Mr. Brownlow. So I've only got one other direction to go. I'm going to have to ask you to shave your head. And he said, oh, that's great. That's not a problem. And there he was every night during makeup with shaving cream all over his head, shaving his head to give it a nice fine sheen. He looked a little bit like Tom over there. And he couldn't have been happier. He was the most cooperative kid. Working with the stage manager, what exactly does your stage manager do? Again, in the handout, you have their list of his responsibilities. I just want to point out a few of the most important things that your stage manager does. This ought to be a student. This ought to be a student who is a self-starter, who's organized, and he really wants to be involved in the play, but being on stage is not his thing. You might have a lot of kids who really want to be involved in this play, but Mr. McKenna standing in front of 500 people is a bridge too far. I can't do that. Well, stage crew is for these kids. He prepares the rehearsal space, putting tape on the floor, making sure that faux furniture is in place so the actors know where everything belongs. He could prepare the prompt book and maintain the stage directions in there so I don't have to do that. Why do I have the kids do all these things anyway? Well, all these things need to be done, and if I have to do it, I can't pay attention to the show. My job is to make sure we do a good show, and if I have to do all these little details, I'll kill myself and put on a bad show in the end. So we have the students do this sort of thing. Prompt the actors when they get off book. Keep track of stage props and so forth. One of the things we do during production to keep track of stage props, we have a stage table covered with what is called butcher paper, just brown paper. And every prop gets put there, circled, and labeled: handgun, book, purse, candlestick, so that everybody knows where those things go, and they're there in the same place every night for upon pain of death if it doesn't get put back where it belongs. Conducting auditions, the most dangerous ground you'll tread. Conducting auditions. Again, there's an audition sheet in your handout form that you could look at. It has to include the child's contact information, his age, sex, and height, special talents he might have, playing an instrument that might be useful in the production, prior stage experience. You want to know if they've had some experience doing this sort of thing. His vocal range, his soprano, a bass, an alto. Any known conflicts. We did our first, I learned this the hard way, we did our first musical, Music Man. I cast somebody in a pretty significant role, and then about halfway through, she told me, oh, by the way, my parents are taking me on a cruise for my birthday. It's Tech Week. You're telling me now? Really, the fault was mine. I'm just asking you this now. I needed to ask you this back when auditions were coming because I might not have cast you in that role. So ask them for significant conflicts. If you're not cast in the play, would you be interested in stage crew, handing out programs, something else? Conduct auditions over a couple of days. If you have an enthusiastic crowd, you won't be able to get them all done in one day. And we typically have three stations: a reading station with an audition committee, a singing station where the music director auditions them, and then a dancing station where the choreographer has them, you know, march in time and step right, left, right foot, left foot. It's really basic stuff, but you'd be surprised. You'll find kids who really can't march to a beat or don't know their right foot from their left foot. And so it's good to know that if you don't want to cast them in the Ginger Rogers role or something like that. People who do this professionally have said, never audition with a panel. My advice to you is, always audition with a panel. Ralph Janikowski, our secondary principal, used the term "covering your six." It's a good way to cover your six when the cast is finally announced. It wasn't all you. It wasn't just all your decision putting everybody. Now you need to make the final decision, but it's not solely your audition. I put, obviously, the music director is on there, the choreographer is on there, and then I get other parents who are interested in seeing that this be an excellent show. Announce the time of the place of the auditions. I hold auditions so that students sign up for a slot. I don't hold open auditions, which means anybody can attend the audition. The kids are nervous enough. Just have them in the room with the audition panel. I hand out samples of the readings in advance. You know, these aren't professional actors. I don't want to see how well they can read cold on the spot. So I said this is going to be the readings. Here, have them 2-3 weeks in advance. Memorize it. I don't care. I do a lead male, a lead female, a couple of two people together, three people together to see how different actors work off against each other and that sort of thing. If some of the auditions are close, I have callbacks. We usually do those within the next couple of days because we want to get this. The kids are antsy and they want to know, so we try to get that out there as much as we can. Recuse yourself. This is my advice. Recuse yourself whenever your own children are under discussion or auditioning. Let's face it. Why does the football coach's son throw better than almost any other kid coming out for the team? Because he grew up in that soup. Why does the music director's kids sing better than just about anybody else auditioning? Because they grew up in that soup. Why do our kids tend to know this stuff? Why do they're more familiar with these musicals? Because they've grown up with it. And so we want to avoid the appearance of nepotism and favoritism as much as we can. So when my children come in to audition for a show, I put my pencil down, I sit back, I say nothing. I let everybody else on the panel decide how he or she did. Same thing for the music director. And then if they get a lead role and the recriminations start working their way around the school, you can say, we really had nothing to do with it. It was everybody else's. And those parents who are on your audition board, they'll rally around as well and say, no, she was the best one for the part. He was the best one for the part. Who best captures the spirit of a particular character? You need to be thinking about that as you cast the play. Who compliments whom? Maybe somebody read really well for the part, but when you put these two characters together who are going to be spending a lot of time with each other, one just doesn't quite click with the other one. Maybe there's a personality thing or something. You need to play them off one another. Remember, we're doing this for the glory of God and an excellent show, and so all other considerations have to take a back seat. Actually, when my son was auditioning for Oliver, he did a pretty good job in the audition, and some of the panel thought he should get the part. But he was shorter than the kid we had already cast as Dodger. I mean, he was taller than the child we had already cast for Dodger. And I couldn't have an Oliver be taller than a Dodger. So my son was out. And that was okay with him. It was okay with me, too. Because the show, an excellent show, a show that made sense, was the overriding deciding factor. So be prepared for the backlash. I try to post the audition, the cast list online, so that I can just be in the quietude of my living room and click send, and then hear the crying all over Millersville. I did that one time, and I did not cast my daughter Molly. I was down in the basement. I clicked send, posted it online. My daughter Molly and the other kids were upstairs at the computer hitting refresh, 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 and the line came up. And that's when I heard Molly crying, because I didn't cast her in the play. I'm laughing about it now, but it was it was tragic. The other kids were, woohoo, I got the part. And Molly's going, I didn't get the part. All right, rehearsal performances. How do you get the most out of rehearsals? I've never had more than an hour to an hour and a half of rehearsal time because of just the logistics of where we are. So the first book I ever read after we did our first play, the first line of the first chapter said, never undertake a play unless you have a minimum of 3 hours rehearsal time. I said, okay, violated rule number one. The second line said, never undertake a musical unless you've had 3 years of drama under your belt. So I just threw that book away because I'd violated both of those core principles right off the bat. You need a good bit of rehearsal time. If I had 3 hours, I would take 3 hours. I get an hour and a half max each day. As I said, study the scenes, study every scene in your mind beforehand. Set an agenda for each rehearsal. When you get the kids in there, students, here's what we're going to accomplish today. So they know what you're aiming for. Everybody's on the same sheet of music. Be flexible. Sometimes how you envision the show coming out, it doesn't come out that way, and the students will have a better solution. So be listening. Be a good listener. Rehearsal etiquette, I convey this to the students. Be on time for everything. Bring a pencil and your script to every rehearsal. Casual or excessive talking is not allowed. I can't hear what the actors are saying if you're louder than them. Stay in the rehearsal room unless I send you somewhere else. The last thing I want is, here's an entrance supposed to happen where, the play is all cooking along, rehearsal's going great, an entrance supposed to happen, and Johnny Actor is not there. Well, where is he? He's gone somewhere else. And then actors waiting to rehearse require them to make good use of their time by either memorizing their lines or doing their homework. The last thing I ever want to hear from Denise is that a student came to rehearse or came to class tomorrow, the next day, and said, I couldn't do my homework because I was at rehearsal yesterday. And then I know that that kid was sitting there for a majority of the rehearsal not doing anything. Well, you know, I'm not going to put up with that. Okay, blocking the play. You need to review stage movements with your students. Don't expect them to know what upstage, downstage, stage right, legs. Don't expect them to know what any of that means. Have them use their pencil and write their movements in their script. That way, when the first time you rehearse Act 1, Scene 1, you might not get to it again for 2 weeks. Well, what's happened to all the blocking in the students' minds between then if they haven't been studying the actual stage directions, where you want them to go, what you want them to do, if they've only been studying their lines? So they have to study both. Otherwise, they'll forget what you ask them to do. What do you do with intimate scenes? Well, here's what we do. First of all, our school culture, we don't allow any PDA, no public displays of affection. So any direction in the script to kiss is just out. However, if a tender moment between those two characters is necessary to move the plot forward, we have to do something. You know, how do Captain Von Trapp and Maria fall in love if they, you know, if you're always saying, hey, leave room for the Holy Spirit, you know? And it was very difficult when we did it because the music director's son was Captain Von Trapp and my daughter was Maria. And here I had to go, no, Palmer, let me show you how to put your hands on Colleen here. And so it needs to be done with tact. Invite the parents to the rehearsal. But it's been done very, very gracefully in our productions. And so you need to think about how you're going to deal with that ahead of time. Production etiquette, again, once you're in costume, don't leave the backstage area, particularly on performance nights, because I don't want the bloom to come off the rose for the audience beforehand. Nobody sees you in your costumes beforehand. No eating or drinking anything but water when you're in a costume. Many of these costumes are borrowed. They can't be washed. And so don't eat or drink anything in a costume. No talking backstage. Return all props to the prop table. Be considerate of one another and treat one another better than yourselves. We'll all be dog tired by the time we get to opening night, and our nerves will be frayed, and we'll just be on the last one. And so be tender with one another. And this is a great opportunity for the older students to be mindful of the younger students, to help encourage them, to look out for them, because they need to remember. I tell the older students all the time, they idolize you. They idolize you. When my daughter was Maria, there was a first grade girl who played Gretel, and they just became fast friends, and they formed a very good friendship. And I had to constantly remind Colleen that Abby just adores you, and you need to really think about how big you are in her mind. Audience development. Think about these sorts of things when you talk about tickets, advertising programs, and so forth. If you've never done a drama before, how much to charge for a ticket is going to be a little bit of guesswork. You're going to know what your theater costs are. Now you're going to know how much you've spent on props and sets and what you've spent. You won't know the income side of the equation, though. That's a little bit of guesswork. You can estimate how many people you think might come to your production and guess at what you should charge for tickets, what your market could bear, and so forth. After you've done it once, you'll probably get dialed in pretty quickly. Are you going to do all the same prices for the tickets, or are you going to do student and senior discounts? Are you going to have general seating or specific reserved seats? You need to think about those kind of things. What do you print on a ticket? Think about that. Obviously, the name of the school, the production, the location, the theater location, the date and time of the performances, the price of the ticket, and the ticket number, so that you can keep track of how many you've sold. You want your receipts to equal at the end of this thing. When and how to sell tickets? Are you going to have a box office? When is it going to be opened? How are you going to publicize that? How do people come and get the tickets? Are you going to sell them online? Does your school have that ability? Does your school take credit cards? Will you allow exchanges? Will you allow refunds? Announce all that ahead of time so that nobody has any guesswork when you get down to the wire. Complimentary tickets. Are you going to comp anybody tickets? Are you going to give tickets to people who've played a significant role in the life of the school? What about comping tickets to parents who are in the process of enrolling but haven't been convinced yet? I heard that. Advertising in local papers. They will not come to you. They will not come to you to review your show. But if you take a picture and send in a brief article and a caption, newspaper editors are always looking for something to print in the local papers. The chances are you'll get something in if you send it. But if you wait for them to come to you, forget about it. What do you include in the program itself? I have a couple here for you to look at afterwards if you'd like to. Sell advertising. Your school community is a great place to sell advertising, and parents would be delighted to do that. You want the title of the play and required information from the publisher. They get very particular, by the way. The name of the show must be two-thirds the size of the directors of, or the author and the screenwriter, and they have all these ticky little things. So read all the rental materials very carefully so that you know where it's supposed to be positioned, how big it's supposed to be, what font it's supposed to be. They're very particular about all that sort of stuff. You want to list the principals, the director, the music director, stage director, all those sorts of things. The backdrop of the play, where is it set? What's the time period? The musical numbers, information regarding the intermission. You're going to have one? Is it 10 minutes long? Is it 15 minutes long? Think about all this. The cast, and triple check the spelling of their names. The last thing you want to do on opening night is have Johnny look at his program and go, my name's misspelled. Oh, forever, it's in stone now, it's misspelled. You could have avoided that. The orchestra, if you have one. The names of the production and the stage crew. Acknowledgements. Remember your principals, your stage manager, your costume lady. Ask all of them who needs to be thanked, because you don't want to forget anybody. You will hear about it the first night. You'll be basking in the glow of the applause. The applause will still be ringing through the theater, and somebody will walk up to you and go, you didn't thank my wife for something. So be careful about that. Sell break-a-legs to grandma and grandpa and mom and dad. And then the Ten Commandments of Theater Etiquette, thou shalt not crinkle cellophane in thy neighbor's ear, and so forth. In closing, there's nothing I think your school could do besides a drama program that provides you this unique opportunity to strengthen the rhetoric program, to build community, to build leadership, perseverance in the lives of your students, to bring the school community together as almost nothing can. However, this is a lofty undertaking. It must not be entered into lightly. It requires a great deal of preparation and thought beforehand, planning, organization, and willing and able bodies. But in the end, there's almost nothing you can do that will accomplish as much in the lives of your students as a drama or a musical program can, to build those character qualities in them I've mentioned, and also to work towards building beauty into the lives of your students. So, thank you very much. If you have any questions, I'll be up here.